This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: presidents of Iran and Kenya stress the need to expand bilateral ties as Ibrahim Raisi visits the African nation. North Korea launches a new ballistic missile as tensions remain high with neighboring South and its ally, the United States. Also in our headlines, Russia warns against NATO's increasing military aid to Ukraine, saying the assistance could bring World War III closer. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi is in Kenya on the first leg of his three-nation African tour. Raisi has held talks with his Kenyan counterpart, William Ruto. Both presidents emphasized expansion of ties between their countries. Iranian and Kenyan officials also signed several memoranda of understanding to boost cooperation. Before his departure, Raisi underlined that his African trip is aimed at expanding economic and political ties with nations there. This is the first visit to the continent by an Iranian president in over a decade. Raisi's three-day trip to Africa will also take him to Uganda and Zimbabwe. Correspondent Gisumi Shamadi tells us why President Ibrahim Raisi's trip to Africa is significant.
A very significant visit by an Iranian president to Africa. It's the first time in 11 years that an Iranian president has traveled to the African continent. Well, this is based on President Ibrahim Raisi's policy to expand bilateral relations with all countries on the basis of mutual respect and mutual understanding. So, of course, Kenya is a very important country in the African continent. It is considered the gateway to East Africa, and stronger relations with Kenya will definitely allow stronger relations with at least 29 other countries with which Kenya has also very strong economic ties. And basically, Iran will be looking at a 4 million...
Israeli forces have evicted another Palestinian family from their home in occupied East Stanowitz, replacing them with settlers. Regime forces stormed the house and arrested several activists. The family has lived in their home for 70 years. Earlier this year, an Israeli court ordered the Sublaban family to vacate their house in favor of settlers. The family fought a 45-year legal battle against regime-backed settler groups to displace them. Palestinian civil society and rights groups have slammed the move. They say it's forcible transfer, which constitutes both a war crime and a crime against humanity under the Rome Statute. The UN says 218 Palestinian households in East Stanowitz face the threat of eviction. Israel occupied East Stanowitz along with the entire West Bank during the 1967 war. It formally annexed the city in 1980 in a move never recognized by the international community. July 12th marks the anniversary of the Israeli war on Lebanon in 2006. Israel's goal behind launching that war was to destroy the Lebanese Hezbollah resistance movement and change the opposition, or rather the composition of Lebanon's population. We're now going to cross over to our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh, to get more on the 33-day Israeli onslaught and Hezbollah's response to that war. Mariam, over to you.
Yes, well, we are in South Lebanon, actually, at the Lebanese-Palestinian border. We are in the town of Marun al-Ras, which is one of the main towns which witnessed fierce fighting between Hezbollah and the Israeli military machine. So basically, why we are in this point specifically, it is considered very iconic when you talk about the conflict between Hezbollah and Israel and the long years of fighting against the Israeli occupation. Also, after the liberation, as you know, there was a time of calm. However, when the Israelis decided to launch a full-scale war against Lebanon in 2006, their main, basically, war, their main practices were shelling, bombarding South Lebanon, many areas in Beirut, in the Bekaa as well. However, here in this area specifically, this is the bordering town, and you can probably see behind me that there is the main border area, and behind that we have occupied Palestine, and it is one of the points where the Israelis first attempted to invade Lebanon. However, they could not get across most of these towns. They could not get across the towns that were at the forefront, since Hezbollah was ready to basically deter any sort of movement by the Israelis. It was also this is one of the towns that witnessed the first attack against one of the Merkava tanks, which was considered one of the main surprises for Hezbollah's military resistance. And of course, they were able to hit it, and that was something that surprised the Israelis, since they thought that it was an invincible tank. And so, in addition to the significance of this area, it also is a reminiscent. It reminds people of that time of war, where you had hundreds of people remain in their towns despite the Israeli invasion, the continuous bombardment, and you had the Hezbollah's, of course, continuous fight. And the fact that you even had, for example, you had a whole infantry of the Israeli military and Israeli army coming to fight an area where you had only seven or so, not more than 10 Hezbollah fighters, that was considered by many people in Lebanon basically a miracle, actually, since it proved that the Lebanese people and even some of the men that were fighting with Hezbollah during that time were not organized or members of Hezbollah's resistance, but decided to stay in their village and fight against the Israelis. Of course, you also saw examples of people, the elderly, who had to stay in the villages. You had some people who had to make do with whatever they had left of food and so on and so forth. They even shared it with the fighters in order to survive those days until there was some sort of a convoy that would perhaps take them to shelter. However, it was a time, a very harsh time. People endured all that suffering. They endured all that bombardment. But it seemed that most of them were ready to take that cost, since they believed that this would probably lead, and it did actually, lead to some sort of an equation. You have that equation that continues to be maintained since 2006 until today.
Okay, thank you very much, Mariam Saleh, joining us from Marun al Ras in southern Lebanon. That's where Yemen's Ministry of Trade is calling on all Muslim nations to follow the examples of his government to ban all Swedish products after the desecration of the Holy Quran in the Scandinavian country. Yusuf Mori has the latest.
To protest last week's burning of the Holy Quran in Stockholm, the Ansarullah-backed Yemeni government has officially banned all Swedish imports into Yemen. This means the Yemeni market will no longer carry almost 500 Swedish brands. The desecration of the Quran has sparked Muslim outrage and condemnation against the Swedish government, who continue to insist the sacrilegious act is a part of freedom of speech.
It is a revolutionary Yemeni people who decided that Swedish products should be banned from Yemen. We also call on all neighboring countries and the Islamic world to take a decisive stand against this act of aggression against Islam. At the very least, Muslim nations should ban all Swedish products.
According to the Minister of Trade, the Sana'a government has put together an economic plan to boost the battered Yemeni economy and compensate for the products which have been banned. They believe this will help Yemen move towards self-sufficiency.
The ban on Swedish products only took place after much research and study on pragmatic solutions needed to replace the banned products. There are going to be many positive steps and decisions the government will take in order to increase and promote local production to stimulate the economy.
That has been involved in what they described as a war on Islam.
The banning of products from Sweden, Israel, the United States and the UK is an obligation on all Muslims worldwide. This is because of the hate and aggression these nations have toward Muslims and Islam. These are people who do not respect the religion of Allah. The banning of products from these nations is a positive step forward to teach them a lesson so that we can depend on ourselves and increase local production and industry.
The Ansarullah-backed Yemeni government said it is funding plans and initiatives to revive Yemeni production. This is necessary in order to provide food security for millions of Yemenis who have suffered tremendously from food shortages caused by the 8-year of Saudi-imposed blockade on Yemen.
The fact is, although boycotting goods from nations that support insulting Islam has some impact, it is simply not enough. This is why the Sana'a government is calling for a united Islamic front to cut off all ties with Sweden and any nation involved in sacrilegious acts against Islam. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Russia has warned that NATO's increasing military assistance to Ukraine could bring World War III closer. Deputy Chairman of the Russian Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, said such military aid would not deter Russia from achieving its goals in Ukraine. He made the remarks on the first day of NATO's summit in Lithuania, where several countries pledged more arms and financial support for Kiev. Medvedev also hinted at the use of cluster bombs by Russia, citing reports of Ukraine already using them. Russia's Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu had said earlier that Moscow would be forced to use similar munitions if the U.S. provided Kiev with cluster munitions. The U.S. has announced it will supply Ukraine with cluster munitions that release large numbers of smaller bomblets which can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Cluster munitions are banned by over 120 countries, including most NATO members. French President Emmanuel Macron says Paris has agreed to supply Ukraine with long-range missiles. That followed Britain's announcement that it will provide Ukraine with similar missiles as well. We discuss this issue with our guests in the News Review program. Let's take a listen.
Now, welcome everyone to the News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. France joins Britain in supplying Ukraine with long-range cruise missiles called Scalp, a move that allows Ukrainian forces to hit Russian troops deep behind the front lines. French President Emmanuel Macron made the announcement at a summit of the NATO alliance in Lithuania. French sources said countries already made a delivery of the missiles. Now, Britain said in May it was supplying its own version of the missile. The French version has a range of about 250 kilometers, three times longer than Ukraine's existing missile capacities. French authorities have suggested Ukraine has given them guarantees it won't fire the missiles into Russian territory. This as Washington has vowed to supply internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine. The U.S. is facing a chorus of criticism over its decision, including from China.
Responsible provision of cluster munitions is highly likely to cause humanitarian issues. Humanitarian concerns and legitimate military and security needs should be addressed in a balanced manner, and the transfer of cluster munitions should be treated with prudence and restraint.
Mao said dialogue's only viable way out of the Ukraine crisis. She urged parties involved to the conflict to avoid fanning the flames of the war. Separately, North Korea's foreign minister slammed the U.S., calling its decision a dangerous criminal act. Even Washington's Western allies, including the U.K., Canada, and Spain, have refused to provide the munitions. Cluster bombs were banned by a U.N. convention backed by more than 120 countries. Controversial weapons are considered a major threat to civilians as they release larger numbers of smaller bomblets that can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Joining us now for the program is Jerome Hughes, correspondent, joining us from Brussels, and Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol. Gentlemen, I'd like to say welcome to both of you and hope you're both doing well. I guess, Jerome, we'll start with you to get the latest. Vladimir Zelensky was pretty irate earlier. He was expecting something in terms of accession. He's getting this consolation prize of a couple missiles with longer capacity. What can you tell us about the way things have unfolded for Ukraine over the past 24 hours, Jerome?
Well, Daniel, I think even before Biden traveled to Europe for the NATO summit, he made it clear that Ukraine is not ready to join NATO. I mean, everybody knows that basically that would end up in potentially a world war simply because Russia would not tolerate that. That would be the final straw for Russia. I mean, we've already seen the expansion of NATO. In April, Finland joined NATO. Sweden is going to become the 32nd member of the military alliance. And it just has been expanding over the past 30 years, which is why Russia says that it needed to secure its, you know, geographical territorial integrity because of the expansion eastward of NATO. But Zelensky is getting everything else apart from that. I mean, you talk about these long-range missiles, but also the cluster munitions, which are banned in more than 120 countries. And also, you know, we have troops, Ukrainian troops are being trained all the time now on warplanes that are going to be supplied by the West. So when you add it all up together, there is growing disquiet here in the European Union. We're getting statements in now all the time from anti-war groups and also political groupings in the European Parliament, and they're expressing concern that Western leaders are really pushing us to a situation where we could have a nuclear war. Because the big question is, you know, at what point does the Kremlin say enough is enough? Because this is relentless. And I was speaking to one security expert in the past couple of days who said, look, the biggest problem here is complacency. Because what happened is at the start, 500 days ago or whatever, February last year, when things escalated, at the beginning, Western leaders were terrified that things could spiral out of control altogether because, of course, Russia is such a major nuclear power. But as the days go on, as the weeks go on, as the months go on, and they keep getting away with more in terms of, you know, what many would see, or certainly what Russia would see as the provocation and this relentless supply of weapons to Ukraine, and as they keep getting away with more and more of that, they become complacent. But as this security expert said to me, that could change overnight. We could wake up one morning and hear news that, you know, things have escalated further because Russia has basically moved towards a situation where it's going to progress to potentially nuclear defense. And that can happen very quickly. So this is the big concern. And I think it's a growing concern, certainly amongst EU citizens here. I'm not sure about the United States, but certainly here, citizens in the EU, and when we hear from the civil society organizations with the statements and the anti-war groups, it's a growing concern.
Thank you there, Jerome. And Tony, welcome to the program there. Thanks for your patience. Now, Tony, ironically, we're getting assurances both to the U.S. that the so-called cluster bombs are going to be used responsibly. Supposedly, the Ukrainians give assurances that they're going to do their best to, there won't be a risk to the civilian population. I don't know if you can give that assurance, actually. And now we're getting guarantees that they're not going to use these missiles into Russian territory. But with an upset Vladimir Zelensky and a frustrated and losing Ukrainian military, what are the likelihoods that things will somehow get out of hand and escalate when you continue to give more sophisticated weaponry to basically push the Russians into maybe a decision that might pull the entire world into this thing if they're already not there?
Well, yeah, I mean, isn't it interesting about Zelensky? He makes these promises, but then, he promised when he was elected president of Ukraine that he would stop the fighting in the southeast of his country and halt the assault by the Ukrainian army on the Donbass, the breakaway regions, which massively voted, the Russian-speaking regions, to secede from Kiev. Now, so why should we trust him when he says that we won't use these Storm Shadow and the Scalp French missiles to hit Russia? And why should we trust him when he says that we will be responsible when we use these cluster bombs? So the answer, of course, is we can't trust him. And it's interesting watching him sort of stamping his feet with NATO, saying we want more weapons, we must join NATO. Well, there's a major problem there in that the NATO Charter is explicit that you cannot join NATO if you've got a border dispute or a war going on. And the question of the Ukrainian border, of course, is very much up in the air. There's a massive border, one, the biggest border dispute on the planet going on there. And so that would mean that if Ukraine was to enter NATO, NATO would be at war with Russia.
Good stuff, gentlemen. Stay safe to both of you. I want to thank you both for joining us on the program today here. Let me name off our guest there. That was Jerome Hughes, correspondent there, joining us out of Brussels, and Mr. Tony Gosling, historian and investigative journalist, joining us from Bristol. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment to your news review.
Pieces of bread from me, and your soul will never be broken. And if I am your haven, you will never be homeless. One whose cloak is me will never be naked. and one whose resort is me will never be destitute. God is above all powers. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden's decision to send cluster munitions to Ukraine has sparked concerns from world leaders, even from among its NATO allies. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to RT, Washington's decision to hand over cluster munitions to Kyiv only shows that Ukraine and its Western backers are powerless to change the situation on the front lines, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said recently. She added, "These bombs are nothing but yet another Wunderwaffe, that is wonder weapon Washington and Kyiv are betting on, without thinking about the harsh consequences of its employment," adding that previous uses of such munitions in the West Asia region and other parts of the world show that its bomblets could stay unexploded for a long time and go off after conflict has ended. The spokeswoman said, "Through the cluster munition deliveries, Washington de facto becomes an accomplice in mining Ukraine's territory and will share full responsibility for the death of both Russian and Ukrainian children." The continued expansion of weapon supplies to Kyiv is aimed at raising the stakes in this conflict to the maximum, Zakharova warned, adding that such actions also showed the U.S. and its allies engaging more and more in hostilities. This serves as yet another example of America's aggressive anti-Russian course, she said, stressing that Washington is seeking to prolong the conflict for as long as possible and turn it into a war to the last Ukrainian. Washington approved another $800 million weapons package for Ukraine, including cluster munitions, despite America's own legislation banning their export. U.S. Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Kull then defended the White House's decision. Some U.S. allies have questioned the move. Recently, German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock expressed a negative attitude to the idea, saying that Berlin is sticking to the Oslo agreements that ban cluster munitions. Austria, which is not a NATO member, said the West would be sending the wrong signal if such munitions are sent to a conflict zone. The use of cluster bombs was also condemned by UN and Human Rights Watch, HRW. The munitions were banned under a UN convention back in 2008. More than 110 nations have become parties to the agreement since then. According to Reuters, Spanish Defense Minister Margarita Robles has said Spain categorically opposes the delivery of weapons. Cluster munitions should not be used by Ukraine under any circumstances, Margarita Robles said recently. Her comment came after a day after the U.S. announced that it would send a controversial ordinance to Ukraine amid a shortage in conventional bombs. Robles told reporters after a rally in Madrid, Spain, based on the firm commitment it has with Ukraine, also has a firm commitment that certain weapons and bombs cannot be delivered under any circumstances. Spain says no to cluster bombs and yes to the legitimate defense of Ukraine, which we understand should not be carried out with cluster bombs, she added, according to Reuters. The White House announced recently that President Joe Biden had authorized the delivery of an unspecified number of dual-purpose improved conventional munitions, DPICM, to Kyiv, based on the unanimous recommendation of the president's national security team. The shells, which can be fired from Ukraine's NATO-supplied 155mm artillery, scatter many small bomblets over a wide area, some of which fail to immediately explode and pose severe risks to civilians for years after the fighting ends. Cluster munitions are banned by more than 120 countries, although the United States and Ukraine are not parties to the ban. Biden's decision was also criticized by Germany and the UK. However, U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told reporters recently that sending these weapons was necessary to bridge the gap until Kyiv's Western backers could increase production of conventional 155mm shells. Also, according to Guardian, California Congresswoman Barbara Lee, sole vote against Afghanistan in 2001 leads party dissent over Biden's recent decision. The decision to provide cluster ammunition to Ukraine risks costing the U.S. its moral leadership in world affairs, the influential California Democratic Congresswoman Barbara Lee said. She said, "We know what takes place in terms of cluster bombs being very dangerous to civilians." Lee said, "They don't always immediately explode. Children can step on them. That's a line we should not cross."
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
NATO leaders say that they are prepared for Ukraine to ultimately join the military alliance. Now, a draft of the summit communique pledges to extend an invitation to Ukraine to join the alliance when allies agree and conditions are met. But the problem is that allies do not agree. Now, Ukrainian President Zelensky immediately hit out at the 31-member alliance for negotiating the text without Kyiv at the table. Now, he complained that it seems, in his words, there is no readiness neither to invite Ukraine to NATO nor to make it a member of the alliance. Now, I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. Stay with us for a discussion of Ukraine's NATO membership bid and the division among NATO members over the issue. Let's first see who is joining us in today's edition of The Spotlight. We'll have Christoph Horstel, author and politician from Berlin. And also from Walnut Tree in California, Rick Sterling, investigative journalist, is joining us.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Now, let me begin with Christoph. My question for you is, as you just heard me in the intro, that NATO is saying that Ukraine's future lies in the military alliance, but there is no time frame, no guarantees either for Ukraine's accession. Now, doesn't this indicate divisions among NATO's 31 members over given a date for a straightforward invitation for Ukraine to join? You know, Kiev has been pushing for a swift entry with security guarantees since even before the war with Russia.
Yeah, of course there are divisions. Of course there's pressure within NATO. It sounds strange that President Erdogan of Turkey has suddenly declared that he's in favor of Kiev's membership within NATO, but still issues contradictive statements on the NATO membership of Sweden. So what we have here is a very interesting situation in where the old and new NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg says that Erdogan has told him that he is ready to accept Sweden as a NATO member. But we miss President Erdogan's own statement, and there are complicated issues about, you know, the formal conduct of this standpoint in the Turkish parliament, and there are forerunners saying that this is not sure that Turkey really supports Kiev, Ukraine, within NATO, because the parliament can say no. So these are very interesting situations right now. Certainly, NATO is strongly divided, and the US has a very strange policy. They insist that the NATO members push for Ukraine's membership and not the US, not Washington, whereas everybody knows that Washington is in favor of that, whereas in our media it is said that Washington is against it. So we have a very, very interesting situation in NATO. This is not what I call, in fact, a strong alliance. This is a strongly divided alliance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now let me turn to Rick. Rick, you know, the issue of how to acknowledge Ukraine's membership ambitions while it's fighting Russia is indicative of divides within NATO, isn't it? Weeks of intense negotiations have been held, and the U.S. and Germany are still wary of implying that Kiev's membership is inevitable without conditions attached. Let's have your assessment.
Yeah, well, in the meeting here, NATO has dropped one formal requirement, which was the completing the membership application plan. But they've raised another vague and ambiguous condition, which is for conditions to be met. And I think significantly, the Secretary General of NATO said in the question and answer that unless Ukraine wins the war, there's no question of membership. And this goes along with the statements of Biden that it's not at all viable for Ukraine to join NATO while it's at war, because that would mean the U.S. and the other NATO countries would be at war. So I think they're giving they're trying to hold out the hope for Ukraine to be admitted to NATO in the future, but they realize that would be suicidal at the present time.
Okay. Now, Christoph, President Zelensky has reacted online. And he said, I'm quoting him, it was unprecedented and absurd when a time frame is not set, neither for the invitation nor for Ukraine's membership. And he also attacked NATO's what he called vague conditions for inviting Kyiv. You know, NATO agreed in 2008 that Ukraine will become a member, but provided no timeline or accession process. So what's the catch?
So we have, in fact, a double blackmail situation here. Very clearly, April last year, Zelensky was forced to stop any peace initiative already signed by his people with Russia. Mm-hmm. And now we have the situation where President Zelensky says, okay, yes or no, what do you want? If you, in fact, he says it indirectly, he doesn't say it directly, if you want us to continue to bleed for you, you better make us a member. Mm-hmm. And what is on the other side is that Zelensky simply might, retire and ask another power to give him a home and money and an opportunity to run away from his job. Everybody knows that these things are on the table with the NATO, not openly, but secretly. So President Zelensky is playing a very, very dangerous double game. Behind the scenes, he has ventured to some of the traveling, diplomats, that it is necessary that he needs a lot of money should he leave his job, because as he may have said, purportedly has said, that he has to pay his generals. Mm-hmm. And everybody knows that. Everybody knows that his position is crazy. Everybody knows that this war cannot be won by Kyiv. Everybody knows that the fight is completely in vain. Everybody knows that if that continues, and if there's more provocation like coming from President Macron right now offering a further reach of drones and things like that, that Russia, if these drones truly reach Russian territory, mm-hmm. that they are ready to forward so far that these drones can no longer reach Russian territory. That is the threat from Moscow. And sooner or later, that will come true, certainly, if these drones reach. So what do we have here? We have, in fact, a very dangerous stalemate with no exit, because Russia is the only winner without or with the stalemate. And that is something in a situation where, of course, we must understand that President Zelensky has to make his choices. And now he has given to NATO his idea that he thinks this is absurd. And we are very curious how long this Mr. Zelensky is ready and willing and able to keep up his absurd position.
Now, Rick, Kremlin spokesman Dmytro Peskov says that NATO is also discussing, apart from membership, weapon supplies to Kyiv. That's, trying to push forward with a so-called counteroffensive against Russia. Russian spokesman also told reporters any move to speed up Ukraine's admission into NATO would be, quote, potentially very dangerous for European security. Now, do you see eye to eye? And if so, what type of danger is he alluding to?
Well, I'm not sure what type of is he suggesting that Ukraine would be brought directly into NATO. I think perhaps he's alluding to that, and which would precipitate exactly the event that both Stoltenberg and Biden have spoken of, which is that if Ukraine was admitted to NATO, then NATO would be at war directly with Russia, and that would basically mean World War III. In the 17-page communique, which has been produced following today's NATO summit, there's a lot of platitudes, but there's also some statements that are significant, which is that NATO will never recognize any territory that has been admitted to the Russian Federation, and specifically Crimea. Of course, Crimea had a referendum in 2014, mm-hmm. and 97% of the population, with 83% turnout, said that they wanted to secede from Ukraine and join Russia. So, right. And this is the general situation that some 30% of the Ukrainian population identify as coming from Russian culture. Russian is their first language. So behind all the talk about democracy, there's an absolute absence of democracy. And that's also significant because Kyiv has imprisoned one of the major opposition candidates. They've made illegal the Russian Orthodox Church. So there's a total absence of any pretense of democracy. So yeah, on those grounds as well, it's completely hypocritical for NATO to suggest that Ukraine should be part of their alliance.
Mm-hmm. Now, Krzysztof, in the middle of this membership bid at NATO, the West is offering arms to Ukrainians in full swing. Larger and larger pledges are made. Even France, that's grappling with a plethora of issues and protests on the home turf, you know, says that it would send long-range scout cruise missiles to Ukraine, and the missiles are the same as Storm Shadow that UK already provided, you know. And the UK is also another European country, you know, facing strike action, you know, over a cost of living crisis and all that. So I want to ask you, what is it that makes these countries neglect their own issues at home and prioritize the issues of Ukraine over those of their own people?
You see that Germany is not a sovereign country is something which is sometimes openly issued by German higher politicians, but in fact it's all of Europe which has to follow Washington's wishes. And these governments obviously are more afraid of Washington than of their own voters and populations. And that is the situation that makes them go this belligerent way and aggressively furnishing a country which cannot, by definition, so to say, withstand Russia's troops with weapons which will only serve to kill more people, that's all. And I'm talking about Ukrainians and Russians alike. They are dying because of NATO weapons, all of them in vain, not for nothing, but completely in vain. It's a vain, useless, senseless, idiotic war, only made up by corrupt forces from Washington. And that is a very, very tragic story that this continues so far. And that is behind all this NATO blah, blah, and all these offers and all these weapons is this, in fact, grotesque dying of Ukrainian people for zero result for Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Rick, same question to you. Why should such countries that are already grappling with their own issues, they are facing protests, strike action on top of a strike action, protests over protests, but Ukraine comes first to them?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I wonder why more Americans and more Europeans are not asking it and out in the streets. I know that there are some protests. We've had some protests. No more weapons to Ukraine being the signature motto of one of the actions, but there should be much more. And the situation, I mean, behind the scenes of the NATO summit, there has to be a growing realization that the war is lost, as the other guest was saying, that the so-called counteroffensive was a complete failure. And the recent announcement that the U.S. is going to start sending cluster munitions,
exactly,
that's another dividing point, and even the foreign minister of Germany has come out against that, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the explanation from Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor of the U.S., was that they've run out of regular munitions, that they and they need the cluster munitions as a, you know, they referred to it as a bridge or stopgap until they can produce more regular munitions. So that's how desperate the situation is, and that's how badly the war is going from their standpoint.
Right. Krzysztof, this cluster munitions is actually my next question, and Rick mentioned it. You know, all NATO allies are stressing that they have this primary objective that they're pushing is to make sure that Ukraine has weapons necessary to continue the fight with Russia. And the U.S. has gone even as far as decide to provide Ukraine with controversial cluster bombs. You know what cluster bombs mean. And the U.S. has a long record of using cluster bombs. You know, 120-plus countries oppose this, and so do some Western allies of Washington. Your take on that?
First of all, that shows that our ammunition reserves have been, you know, plundered, in fact, and they are empty. And it is said by our military expert that 6 to 12 hours Germany army would be able to withstand if there's an attack, and after that we run out of ammunition. Mm-hmm. So this is true. But of course, this is no excuse, viable and useful in any way, that you provide another country in a war situation with cluster bombs. Cluster bombs are forbidden, and it is very clear that the U.S. is breaking again a law, yeah, and a rule, and something which has been agreed, rightly say, 120 countries. Kiev signed, yeah. In former times, of course. So this is a perverted situation that shows in a very bright light the extent of criminal policies to which Washington is ready to go in order to make sure that the dying of Ukrainians continues. Mm-hmm. And that's so far a terrible effect, in fact, a terrible fact that we face with this NATO summit. That all of NATO is unable to speak out in favor of rules of law. We call ourselves the rules-based West, and we spit on any rule, we spit on any law, we spit on any contract if we have to, and continue our dirty policies. So in fact, this is a shame summit of NATO there in Vilnius, and that they need so much security for these politicians, that seems natural.
Exactly. Now, Rick, all NATO member states agree that Ukraine cannot join the alliance while the war is going on. That's what also President Biden said. Now, it's because they say that this would trigger NATO's Article 5 mutual defense clause and bring all members into conflict. You know, but the thing is this really why they're saying this? Because, you know, they are involved in the war, given all the military and logistical support for Kyiv.
They are involved in the war, but it's the Ukrainians who are doing the dying. So from the United States perspective, and of course the NATO is completely dominated by the United States, this is okay. In fact, you can even see that there's an economic advantage to the United States, because all of that, a big portion, at least, of the military hardware that's going to Ukraine is manufactured in the United States. So the military-industrial complex, their stocks have been rising. They're doing fine. They're getting very hefty contracts to produce more and more munitions and weapons. And many of the European states that have been providing weapons to Ukraine, they're coming to the United States to supply them. There's one area where the United States is an industrial leader. One of the few areas that are left is in the military hardware side of things. So that's the sad thing, and I completely agree with the other guest here that this is tragic and this is totally unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And Ukrainians are dying, and it's people like Lindsey Graham, the senator from the Republican Party in Washington, longtime senator, who's even said explicitly, this is kind of an ideal situation. Ukrainians are helping us destabilize and weaken Russia. So that's the tragic and sad thing about this. The Ukrainians are tools in this proxy war, which is unnecessary and should be ended immediately.
Okay, and Christoph, the G7, advanced Western economies are also separately preparing to announce a multilateral security arrangement for Ukraine on Wednesday, and this is following the NATO summit. And that would mean bilateral pledges, which are set to include military and financial support packages for Kyiv to help it fight Russia for, quote, as long as it takes. How much longer would it go on, in your opinion?
First of all, it goes as long as the peoples in the West support it. So if they storm the White House and if they depose the illegal U.S. government, that's finished. And there's another point. If we do that in Germany, that would be even enough to finish it, because without making sure that Germany is a victim of this war in Ukraine, Washington would not be ready to continue. So this is a very interesting question. I'm right now in an election campaign in Germany, and we see the situation very, very clearly. Unless, peace promotion is backed by enough people, war will win. And that is a rule worldwide.
Okay. And I got one last question for both of you. You have each 1 minute. Rick, what's the prospect of security in Europe, you know, given the goings-on in that part of the world? And how would that impact security worldwide?
Well, the prospects are not good at the current moment because the United States and their so-called partners in NATO keep going up the escalation ladder. They said they wouldn't send long-range missiles, then they overturned that. Then they indicated they wouldn't do depleted munitions, then they did that. They said they wouldn't do, there wasn't cluster bombs and so on and so forth. The attack on the Nord Stream pipeline, which was clearly carried out by the U.S. and or allies, and the blowing up of the dam, the Kukovo Dam, the threats against the Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant. Where is the escalation going to stop? So I totally agree that we need an outpouring of opposition to the war. It's hurting people worldwide and endangering, you know, the entire world.
Okay. Christoph, you have 1 minute.
Yeah. We have a very, very bad perspective. In fact, our governments fight against their own people. They keep their opposition divided, espionaged upon. They keep them under pressure, under illegal pressure. So the whole judicial apparatus is being misused to oppress the opposition in Western countries, in Germany, of course, as well. Our little party, what happens to us is crazy. So we have a situation where the European people have no means left to liberate themselves. All these rulers are externally and internally going forward illegally, and that is a very, very bad situation. And I don't see any close positive viewpoint on this, and I am very much fearing escalation.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Christoph Forstall in Berlin, Germany, Rick Sterling in Walnut Creek, California.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
from our imams, the ninth imam is the first, whose imamate began at a very young age, about 8 or 9.
As-salamu alayka ya Abu Jafar, Muhammad ibn Ali, al-Barakat.
Peace be upon you, O Abu Jafar, Muhammad, the son of Ali, the righteous, the pious.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm your host Mahdi, and we're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. Imam Muhammad ibn Ali al-Jawad alayhi salam was the ninth divinely appointed imam from among the household of the Messenger of Allah. And His Eminence Imam al-Jawad was also the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. We find that Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam economized when it came to spending upon himself. He lived a rather ascetic, simple lifestyle. But His Eminence Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam spent a great abundant amount of wealth on the poor and the needy people amongst the Muslims. And it is precisely because of this unequaled and unparalleled generosity that Imam al-Jawad has been called and titled Al-Jawad, the Generous. This surname was the most particular and famous surname of Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, to the extent that he was well known and famous for it amongst the people.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the ninth divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam. So, dear friends, we find in one of the beautiful dialogues that Imam al-Jawad had with a man from Al-Hira, which is a place in Iraq of the present day. So Imam al-Jawad alayhi salam, he had this conversation with this individual, and in this conversation and in this dialogue, they began to speak about the fear of Allah. Now, when we're talking about the Arabic, we find that sometimes taqwa or piety is also translated as the fear of Allah. Now, before we go ahead and talk a little bit about the conversation and the dialogue itself, it's important to note that this fear of Allah is not the fear that one has from, for example, you know, an oppressor or a tyrant, or the fear that someone has because of a potential harm that will come about by a certain individual or an entity. So this is a negative kind of fear, if you will, this fear that one has, you know, from harmful effects or from things that might harm one and one's life. This is not the fear that one has when we talk about the fear of Allah, or when we talk about taqwa, meaning the fear of Allah, even though taqwa has many other meanings as well. Here, the fear can really